Welcome to Parents' Perspective. Mommy! Shrieked 4-year-old Samantha. Ryan hit me! Oh, crumb, moaned Darlene, extricating herself from the kitchen stool where she was sitting with her friend Pat, and moving quickly to her rambunctious 2.5-year-old son. Now, Ryan, she began, holding his hands, we don't hit, we use words.
It hurts! Wailed Samantha. He hit me here!
She pointed to her right arm. Poo-poo head! She stuck her tongue out at her brother. Now, Samantha, Darlene turned to her daughter and said, we don't call names. Just then, Ryan picked up his toy truck and lunged toward Samantha. Darlene deftly put out her left arm, which he hit as he tumbled to the floor onto his bottom. Then he began to whimper. Looks like you've got a lot going on here, observed Pat, right behind Darlene. I think we could use a UN negotiator right about now, or a wrestling coach, replied Darlene. From a parent's perspective, how can parents benefit from parenting education? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest is quite comfortable with the effects of parenting education. Dr. Renee Hackney is a parent educator who owns and teaches at parenting playgroups in Alexandria, Virginia. Formerly a preschool teacher, she now holds degrees in school and developmental psychology. Dr. Hackney is the mother of 2 daughters, ages 5 and 8 years. Welcome to Parents' Perspective, Dr. Hackney.
Thank you.
Parenting has occurred for thousands of years. Why do we now need parenting education?
I think we need it because developmental psychology and looking at children's lives through the research is a relatively new field. Looking at temperament and attachment within families started in the late 60s to early 70s. Looking at emotional development started in the 1980s. So these are newer fields, and there's a lot of research that's happening today.
So we benefit from that research?
We do. There's so much information out there that I wish could trickle down to parents more readily, and it doesn't seem to as well. You see it in the research journals, you see it talking to psychologists, but you don't see it as full as it should be in the popular media.
I don't think people refer to the textbooks and the reference books when they're in the kitchen in the middle of this kind of
event. They don't.
You just have to know it.
Yeah, but just looking at the field of aggression, it's only been the last 10 years where they've looked at girls with aggression. And so that's such a big topic now, and the research is relatively new. So to learn about that, you need to go somewhere specific.
Mm-hmm. Would you now see more girls with a toy truck being thrown at the other kid?
Sure, and they're just starting to sort out why that is. There's some people who point to the idea that girls entering athletics and girls in competition has increased that. Not that that's a bad thing. It's a good place that it came from. But to sort out where and why those things are happening are important for families. There's also the idea that extended families are living farther and farther apart. I'm constantly in touch by email, by phone with my parents, but that's a different thing, calling them to ask them a specific question rather than having them live right with us and see the development of my children and being able to help in parenting on a daily basis. So if you don't have the immediate family and social network, there may be a need for parenting education that wasn't there years ago.
It's interesting, and we used to see this in previous generations where nobody really moved out of the small town or
right.
that kind of thing. And so you could talk to, you know, great Aunt Sarah and find out, yes, indeed, Uncle Alfred used to do the same thing, and that was fine. When he got to be 10, he was okay, or
right.
that kind of stuff.
And now everyone's so scattered.
Mm-hmm.
There's also the idea that we, as parents in America at least, are the most well-educated, oldest group of parents there's been. We're waiting till our 30s and 40s to have children. So these are often parents who have gung-ho at grad school, or they've attacked a career, and now they're going into parenting. So they go at it with that same drive. They want to know the best way to do things. They want to know what the researcher's finding. And so it's a different feel from parenting rather than when parenting was typically in the young 20s.
Do you think that parents in this 30s to 40s group are feeling a greater level of stress because they know more?
Sure, sure. I get that question myself. They say, well, what do you think about your parenting? Or you must be a perfect parent. And I say, well, actually, no. But when I make a mistake, I feel really, really guilty because I know what the research says. And so there is that stress when there's the pressure.
We end our shows almost always looking at each other and going, oh, nuts, here's something else we didn't do when we were raising our children. So,
what would you say is the impact of teaching parenting on your own family, since you are a parenting educator?
Yeah, when we come around to topics like overscheduling, and there's specific guidelines that are given by American Academy of Pediatrics about how many activities at what age ranges, I have to stop every year and think, what are we enrolled in? What are we doing? Or when I give discipline lectures and fathers will come up with specific questions, I think about my own husband and discipline and what he's doing. And so it gives me a good review almost every day of the things that I'm doing.
One of my sons is a psychiatrist, and when he was graduating from his residency program, there was actually a graduation and a beautiful dinner. And after the dinner, there was one faculty member who spoke about each of the graduating residents. And the one who spoke about my son knew that Sandy and I had a book out that was called Parents as Mentors. And he had gotten his hands on a copy of it, and he reached from behind his back and he said, "We know that your mom and your dad were your original mentors. We have been your mentors while you've been in this program. We know why you've turned out so well. After all, your mom wrote the book."
Oh, gosh.
Put the burden on the mom, but it was a little late.
That's a big burden.
It was very cute.
Yeah. What do you tell parents is the most significant key to good parenting?
In the early years when they've got a baby, I think that sensitive and responsiveness in caregiving, that parents are coming quickly when the baby cries, that parents are trying to let that child know their needs are going to be met. As children get a little older, I think of still building that sense of unconditional love. But for parents, I think it's realizing that the capacity for change in relationships lies in the parents, not in the children. So often the parents are so focused on changing that child's behavior, on forcing that child to do things. If they really would slow down and understand that the change for the good is going to come from their end, the parents' end, it tends to go a lot better.
Can you explain what that means?
Sure. Let's say two children are out playing in the yard and one runs over the other with their tricycle. The parent can choose to think about that as, my child is always hurting people. My child is always choosing the wrong thing. And that's very frustrating to the situation. The parent can choose to think, wow, my child was trying to keep them in the yard. My child was trying to help me to help them. It's just looking at the perspectives that the parent takes. It tends to impact the relationship.
And what the parent does in reaction?
In reaction, exactly. How that parent perceives it is going to shape how they respond.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on parenting education.
Washington, D.C. with Kids, an excellent book by authors Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We are talking with Dr. Renee Hackney of Parenting Playgroups about parenting education.
You know, Sandy and I both have grown sons. Mm-hmm. Two of them are actually fathers, and several of them are married. And we sometimes will remember back and think, we weren't gentle enough. I don't think I was kind enough. Mm-hmm. I enforced the rules, or I jumped very quickly. If it was, especially if my child was the aggressor, I would jump in and very often grab my child and leave the circumstance or send home the other mother and child.
Right.
And looking back at it, of course, a lot less was known, but I also didn't go looking in a book when I had to deal with that particular situation. I read everything that was available at the
right.
time. But looking back at it, I think the gentleness would have been more important than the firmness.
We talk a lot about slowing down and about recognizing the emotions that are happening in that situation. We talk a lot about coaching children through the situation rather than just pulling them out so that they learn better what to do the next time. We talk very little about fixing what just happened.
Now, how do you coach a child through the situation if little Janie is still there and Johnny has bopped her on the head with something?
Sure. Well, we talk about steps in discipline. We talk about iMessages for parents if they are feeling upset or angry, dealing with their own emotions before they jump in and start to discipline. If parents are feeling ballistic at what just happened and they try to fix it or discipline, it doesn't go very well. We also talk about dealing with the child's emotion, because if parents jump in and try to fix things or discipline when the child is hysterical, it doesn't go very well. And then we talk about positive intent, the idea of looking at the good behind that bad behavior. We talk about giving the child choices about how to do better the next time and consequences for what they just did, meaning next time that you want a toy from somebody, rather than hitting them, what else could you do? And talk them through the different options that are available. If someone really got hurt, we would probably follow that up with, wow, that hurt her. Now I need you to come sit out for a few minutes. Most parents jump right to, that hurt her, come sit out. And I want parents slowing down and thinking about the emotions that are happening and offering choices for how to do better the next time.
You mentioned iMessages for parents. Would you clarify that a little bit?
Sure. iMessages are a way to productively share your parenting emotions. Most parents are yelling and screaming in discipline. They're angry, and children know they're angry. iMessages allow parents to give it a label by saying, I'm frustrated, or I'm angry, or I'm upset. And then we encourage parents to focus on the behavior that just happened. I'm frustrated, no one is listening. I'm angry, people are running in the house. I'm upset, that pinching hurts her. So we talk about the second part of the iMessage, that pinching hurts her, or people are running. Focus on the behavior. Most parents tend to focus on the child. I'm mad at you, you broke my lamp. I'm frustrated with you, you never listen. That's a you message. You messages induce shame in children. They feel badly about themselves. iMessages focused on the behavior, instead of shame, the child feeling threatened and ashamed of themselves, they feel guilty about the behavior and they want to stick around and fix it. So we talk about iMessages, that here's my parenting emotion and here's the behavior specific reason why, as being a more productive way to enter into discipline.
Do today's parents have issues that are different from those their parents dealt with?
I think they do. There's definitely more a sense of competitive parenting. I hear that all the time from parents who are in our workshops, that there's too much charting of behaviors. There's too many comparisons made on the playground. Well, what is your child doing? Well, why isn't your child doing this or that? Or my child did that 6 months ago. And so there's not only that pressure that they already feel on themselves, but there's that increased competitiveness between parents. I think it's bad because it leads to a lot of guilt.
Why do you think that is today?
I think there's just been a push in general to chart behaviors. The parenting books started coming out with those developmental milestones and the chart where your child's progress is month to month. That alone puts pressure on parents to be sure their kids are up. If their children aren't up where the books are telling them they should be, there tends to be that guilt, and parents tend to think, oh, what did I do wrong? What am I lacking? It's likely not much about the parents at all. There's such a wide range of normal, and children fall sometimes at the higher end, sometimes at the lower end. And I think about my own girls. When they were first learning to talk, one child said her first words at about 9 or 10 months old, and she was in, you know, 2 and 3 word sentences when she got to be about a year. My other child, who I was doing everything I thought the same way, didn't say her first word until about 18 months. She had her own issues happening. Now she talks up a storm, but she had her own issues happening, and the more pressure I was putting on myself, it just isn't very helpful.
What actually goes on in parenting education classes? We've talked a lot about the need for
it. Sure. Our classes are designed to be like college courses. They're lectures with time built in for questions, time built in for debate and discussion. The classes where it's parents only, that's how they tend to run. Everybody comes in and we get right into the lecture material. Some of our classes have children at the classes, and so we paint and we play and we have snack and sing-alongs, and then the parents sit for a parenting discussion while the kids play. There's a difference, too, between 8-week classes, and then we have a 44-week program. In the 44-week program, those parents all get to know each other, so we're talking about deeper issues and we're talking about our individual families, and it can get pretty emotional.
I know you have a series of all different kinds of topics. Mm-hmm. Would you give some examples of what they are?
Sure. We do have an 8-week series on discipline. We also talk for a week about potty training, a week about picky eaters, 5 weeks on preschool readiness, preschool education, and kindergarten readiness. We talk about sibling rivalry for a week, temperament and attachment, language development. It's
a
wide range.
Sounds like a broad spectrum of things.
It is. And it's been interesting to discuss it with so many different parents. We've got about 40 to 50 parents who come through the programs every week. So it's not just my perspective, it's my perspective and their shared perspective.
Mm-hmm. What is generally the range of children's ages of the parents who come in?
We see parents 15 months old to about 3.5 years old in the toddler program, that larger class. In the discipline class, we see parents from 2.5 until about 9 years old.
Do you ever have parents of teenagers come in?
No, not to our office. We have parents of teenagers call, and I refer them on to other places. It's my training is limited to those elementary school years and earlier. They become, it seems, much bigger issues to me as they get older.
They may not be bigger. They're different,
issues.
You're right. You've mentioned competition among today's parents, which is so sad to hear that. But what are some of the other kinds of problems parents are tackling?
In the first few years, parents talk a lot about temperament and attachment and building attachment relationships while not spoiling a child.
They still use that word.
They do. They talk about, is it, you know, are you spoiling your child if you hold them too much? Are you spoiling your child if you go to them too quickly? No, not at all. Right. And it breaks my heart, especially when I'm talking to parents of like a 4-month-old baby because they're so little. But a lot of parents come in to talk about more practical things in those first few months to years, sleep being a big one. A lot of parents have a lot of questions about building healthy sleep habits. As children get a little older in the preschool years, they come in to talk about those specific things like potty training and picky eating habits and managing aggression often.
Are there certain topics that you found especially hard to discuss in your classes?
We get a lot of debate over the spanking issue, over, we call it power assertive discipline, with spanking being part of that. I start by talking to parents about how when the researchers go in and look in homes, when they're interviewing parents, when they're taking questionnaires, they don't differentiate between spanking a child on the bottom and grabbing arms too hard, or spanking a child on the bottom and screaming in a child's face. It's all lumped in together as something called power assertive discipline. We start that way because I get parents who occasionally are just surprised. They say, you know, when I'm angry, I grab my child's arms hard. I've left a mark. I would never spank my child. And they don't seem to realize that those long-term childhood outcomes that are discussed in the research are lumping all of those parenting behaviors together. We also get a lot of debate because people have their own histories, what they grew up with, what their parents did. And so often, well, my parents spanked me and I'm here today, or it made me a better person, or so it becomes real personal.
It's interesting. I think there are also probably cultural differences, too.
Definitely cultural differences. And you hear that between parents, but you also see it in the research.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on parenting education.
For an audio CD of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $10 with your name, address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C. 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with Dr. Renee Hackney of Parenting Playgroups about parenting education.
Linda and I were interviewed in a radio station in the middle of the country when our first book came out, and there was a huge issue. For some reason, the interviewer was very interested in spanking and really wanted us to say that we thought spanking was really okay in certain circumstances. And you know, we weren't going to say that, but this was a huge push, and the callers on that particular radio station also wanted us to say that because they were spanked and they felt that they needed that to be validated. So
it's still a fairly common practice. It's up to about 70% of parents report that they at least occasionally use some of those power assertive techniques, and if 70% are reporting it, you know, it's a bit higher. So it's it's still prevalent.
That was a tough interview for us because there were a lot of live call-ins, and every one of them wanted to tell us why we were missing the boat by not approving spankings as a general good disciplinary tactic.
Right.
And we had a tough time with that one. Dr. Hackney, as I understand it, some of your classes are for social workers and preschool teachers, or workshops. I'm not sure how you approach that.
Sure.
What's the difference in teaching those professionals and teaching parents who may or may not be professionals of some sort as well?
When we teach those one-day workshops to the social workers or the preschool teachers, they tend to be more globally focused. They want to learn techniques. They want to learn ways to prevent behaviors. Often when we're talking with parents, they are focused on something specific. They're focused on fixing something. It's more a reaction to rather than preventative. I want parents to be preventative. I want parents to be thinking big picture rather than this one specific issue. So it's nice in that respect when we sit down to talk to preschool teachers and social workers.
Can you recall some of the outcomes parents and children have experienced after going through a parenting education course?
Sure. We get a lot of feedback on the discipline classes, that those have really helped parents to slow down and to think about the things that they're choosing to say and what that impact of the language might be. We've had mothers say, you know, I was a good mom before, but now I feel like I'm really relating to my child. I'm recognizing their emotions. They're more relaxed. I'd like to go back and follow up with some of those families a few years later. We've been teaching classes for 3 years, so I'd like to go back and see if it's had a longer-term impact. We've had some shorter things, like a parent who came to us just a few weeks ago about potty training. They had been going round and about for about 6 months with potty training, and they were trying to force the issue, and they were using rewards like holding out Disney movies and holding out playing games with their children for potty training. We talked for less than an hour about giving this child ownership of the process, about moving away from the use of rewards, about being the cheerleader and encouraging that child and making her feel more in charge of that process. Within 2 weeks, she was going to the potty, and the parents just were so relieved that it seemed to be done. So it doesn't have to be the long-term fix. It can be shorter, very specific things as well.
Dr. Hackney, if parenting education classes are not available within a reasonable distance for some of our listening parents, what other resources might be helpful?
The internet can be a great resource. There's the 0-3 website, which offers a wide range of articles for parents on different topics. There's also many good books out there. I would tend to look for books done by the researchers themselves. Dr. Suzanne Denham writes about emotional development, writes about preschool intervention. Dr. Kenneth Rubin writes about early childhood friendships and building social relations. The reason I look to the books written by the researchers is that that's their passion. That's their life. That's what they've been studying for so long and what all their grad students have been studying for so long. So they tend to be very rich in the research. We're going to have the discipline book available, and we'll have our DVD, which is the full 8-hour course. And our website is parentingplaygroups.com. There's moms clubs internationally that you can tend to find in even small towns. There's parenting book clubs. We've started one in our area where parents are getting together and picking a parenting book to read and then discuss together. Just using your pediatrician as a resource can be good, especially if they're a developmental pediatrician.
How do you know what a developmental pediatrician is?
Through interviewing the pediatricians. There are pediatricians who have a background in training in developmental issues as well.
What question would you ask?
Are you a developmental pediatrician?
Oh,
yeah.
That ought to work.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, would they know? I mean, all pediatricians know what that is?
Sure, or they should.
Okay.
Yeah, our pediatrician, he's a developmental pediatrician. He took child development courses on his way through. He's able to answer those questions. When we go in for our well baby checkups, they start by doing a developmental survey. Is your child doing this, that, or the other? Do you have any questions about development? And then they'll sit and talk to you about the child's development rather than just their health. So it's kind of an added piece. And at least in larger cities, you should be able to find developmental pediatricians.
Well, Dr. Renee Hackney, you have been a terrific resource yourself. Thank you so much for enlightening us and all of our listeners.
Thank you very much for having me today.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of Dr. Hackney's Positive Discipline Workbook. It's the workbook text of her 8-week course. Just give us a call toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address, and please spell anything that's not obvious. That's a big help to us. Mention show number 296. And please tell us what station you're listening to if you can. Since we air all over the world, it's fun to know where you're tuning in. Our latest book, Washington, D.C. with Kids, is available in all major bookstores and on the web.
To learn more about Parents Perspective, visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org. That's www.parentsperspective.org. At the site, you can even hear a show at any time. Just scroll down to the topic or guest of your choice and click onto the words Listen to Podcast below. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents Perspective. Our sound engineer is Damon Fisher. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.